guys. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, the esteemed, the fantastic, the talented Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for that.
You like those adjectives? I gave you adjectives.
Yes.
Today.
Okay, very good. Cool. By the way, look at me. I'm wearing our new
t-shirt. Oh, look at that.
Flyers. I'm wearing it today.
Good for you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm wearing my Peace, Love, and Logic shirt.
So, yeah, you got a hat on. You got the Delta Flyers.
Yeah, so for those of you who want Delta Flyers merch, you can go to thedeltaflyers.org, and you can find our shop there. And if you're interested in this Peace, Love, and Logic shirt, you can go to foreverensign.com, which is the new website that I just started.
How are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm my temporary... the crown is temporary. I have to get the another full crown, but it's holding in after a couple of days, I guess. So it's not bad. It's not bad. And how are you? You're okay? Everything good?
I'm good. Yeah. Still in Utah and went on a hike. We got Walter, the famous Walter dog. We got him some booties for hiking because he was cutting his feet on some of the sharp rocks and things like that. Mm. It's very deserty up here where we're at. Hmm. So that was funny to watch him walking around in his new booties.
Yeah. Was he doing this little, this really weird, like,
so very funny. It's funny. He got used to it, though.
Yeah. He'll it takes some time, but the initial booty, trying on those booties, it's hilarious.
Really, it was very funny. And then he just sort of froze there. He didn't want to walk at one point. He was like, I'm just going to stand here because this is weird. So that was funny, but
we have to get booties in Calgary because of the snow. Yeah, because it's so cold and they could get frostbite. And when we have two dogs, so we have George, who's half half Pomeranian, half Husky. So because he's Husky, Huskies grow fur between the pads of their paws, so there's extra protection for them. So he's okay. But then we've got the little one who's half Chihuahua and half Yorkie, which she doesn't have any protection.
No, so very delicate dog.
Yes. So booties are definitely needed for the small little dog.
Yeah.
So this week's episode is before and after.
Oh, yeah.
Before and after. So everyone, please stay tuned while Robbie and I go watch the show. We'll be right back for all of our Patreon patrons. Thank you so much for your patronage. Please stay tuned for your bonus material. We'll be right back.
See you in a minute.
Alrighty, Robbie and I are back from watching Before and After.
Yes.
Hey, how's it going, Daddy?
Granddad to you.
Wait, no. You're my daddy. Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Right. My kid is your grandson. So that's why I called you.
This whole episode was really hard for me to follow.
Oh my gosh.
The timeline. I mean,
yeah.
I guess I would say that for me, it reminded me of these kind of time jumpy stories are really hard for me. Like,
yeah,
this is going to sound crazy, but I'm a big musical theater fan.
Yes.
And there are two of my favorite musicals that I just don't think work because they involve playing with time. One is called Merrily We Roll Along. It's a Stephen Sondheim musical where it goes backwards. It starts from the end of the story in the beginning and then goes with this group of friends as old people and then goes all the way back to when they first met as young people.
Okay.
And it's just, it intellectually, I get the idea, but when you watch this musical, it just doesn't work. And there's another musical called The Last 5 Years about a couple And the male character tells the story in normal order, and the female character tells the story in the backwards order, and they meet only for a moment right before intermission, and then they continue on. So you hear his side of the story from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You hear her side of the story starting at the end and going
right.
It's very, anyway, I just thought of both of those things as I was watching this episode going, I get it intellectually, but yeah. I was having trouble getting engaged emotionally because it's, the rules are so messed up.
I hear you. It sounds like those two musicals, it's just very difficult as an audience member to track what's happening. You yeah. start getting confused. And it's the same thing with this episode. I actually had to watch it more than one time for me to kind of like understand what was happening
yeah.
and pick up on what's going on, because you are definitely confused right from the get-go. Like very yeah. first scene, you're like, what is happening? You know, and even when you sort of say like, okay, I'm kind of getting it. There's still scenes that pop up where you're going, wait, what's happening again? You're still yeah, asking yeah. that question again. So let's jump into it with our poetry synopsis.
And... yes, let's do. Because starting with some poetry is a really lovely way to calm down and get focused.
Yes.
In a way that it was hard to focus.
Yes.
Okay. On this. Okay. My haiku for this episode goes a little something like this. Mm-hmm. Kes moving backwards. Alternate reality. Prepare for Krenim.
Okay, there you go. Short and sweet.
Yes.
All right, here we go with my limerick for before and after. Here we go. Kes wakes up, she's a grandmother. A life that seems like another's. She keeps jumping back. Solution she lacks, 1.47 to recover.
Ooh, nice.
You like that puppy? Hey,
that was a good one. You got focused in on this.
I did, man. I was like, I gotta get this sucker down. Good.
Yeah.
So this is written by Ken Biller and directed by, would this be the very first episode that Alan Croker directed?
I think so. I think it was.
Okay.
I don't remember him directing in our rewatch. I haven't seen his name pop up.
Yeah.
Alan, as we know, became one of our regular directors. He directed a lot of episodes. After this, but I think this was the first time he may have directed Deep Space Nine. I think that's where he started in Star Trek.
That was his entree, was DS9. So. Okay. Well, I will say about Alan is that he's one of those directors that I definitely look forward to working with on a daily basis. You know, just one of those all around great guys, always kind of telling jokes and really lighthearted, you know, when the camera wasn't rolling. Just someone who you would have a beer with. Yeah. That's what I would say Alan is like. Somebody you would enjoy having conversation with. So
And he also, I thought, was always very passionate about the work.
Oh yes, most definitely.
Get into a scene, he would really collaborate with the actors.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be stuck on shots that, you know, you have to stand here and don't turn until this moment. And
yeah.
He was very organic in the way that he liked to work with the actors on scenes, but he had a perspective. He had a something about the scene that he wanted to create and that he felt was important. And I appreciated his passion. I know Marvin loved him because he and Marvin would get into these handheld scenes where, you know, actors would move around and the camera would whip over here and they'd do these really fun and complicated handheld sequences with Alan. So yeah, it was great to see his name pop up there.
Passion is a good way of describing it. I would also say just excitement. Like when he's on the set, it almost seems like this is his first time directing. Like every time he's there, he's so into it, which really, as an actor, that makes you feel like, well, I'm going to do better, or I'm going to be as into it as he is. That energy is infectious. And I just loved the, you know, how he set the tone when he showed up to direct.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's funny because probably 10 years after this, after... Mm-hmm. This episode, cut to 10 years later, I was on the first season of Chuck, producing Chuck, the TV show Chuck, and directing on that. But we had a director fall out in the first season, very last minute. And we were looking around for directors. And I said to the studio, I said, do you know Alan Croker? And they were like, no, this was Warner Brothers. And they said, no, we've never worked with that director. We don't know him. And I said, well, I worked with him on Star Trek. He's really awesome and he's available right now. He could jump into this last minute slot. And so they met with him and he came on, he got the job and was able to direct on Chuck the first season. And he became one of our most you know, regular directors. I know Zach Levi loved him in particular, really loved Alan.
Wow. So, you know, I came to visit you so many times when you were working on Chuck. I missed Alan. I didn't see him. I didn't.
He did a lot of episodes. He did. Yeah.
Okay. And also, there is a difference in the pronunciation of his name. Some people say Craker. Some people say Croker. You know, so there is a little bit of a delineation between how you pronounce that name.
I say Alan Craker, but I don't know if I could be, even though I've known him for a long, long time.
Well, okay. If you look at the spelling of the name, the O and the E, essentially that is a German.
It's a German thing.
Yes.
Right?
And so it is where the umlaut should go. So if you think about Walter Koenig's name, right? It's K-O-E-N-I-G, right? So it's really an O with an accent.
It's not Koenig.
The double dots are above the O. So the real spelling should be K-O-N-I-G with the O with the two dots. So Croker or Craker's last name should be K-R-O with the umlaut, K-E-R without the E. The E is just to symbolize that there should be an umlaut over the O. So the way you pronounce, for instance, Walter's name, the umlaut, Walter Koenig is really Koenig in German. So er is the sound of the O-E. Yeah. So it should be Kröker is what it should be, but that's very German and not anglicized. And so I think when he got to Canada, he's Canadian. So he just said, you know what, just pronounce it Kröker, you know, right. Or Kröker, whatever. So he sort of slides on however people pronounce that because there are different ways of pronouncing it.
Well, I loved him. He's awesome.
He's great. Great guy. Okay. So we start off in sick bay and the first thing we see is old age makeup. And I just want to make a comment that the only people that have gone through old age makeup until this point, season three, towards the end of season three would be myself, Harry Kim, who had to go through old age makeup when we did the thaw, when Michael McKean was in that episode. And that was my time to put on all the prosthetics. And then now Kes is the only other person to put a full face of, because you can tell every bit of her face is covered prosthetic. And that would have taken approximately 3 to maybe 4 hours to apply everything on her.
And she was in a lot of scenes, half the episode or
more. Oh my gosh.
That old age makeup. Mm-hmm. So she was in that chair a lot. Yeah.
So she was a trooper for sure on this one. So she's lying on the bio bed and in pops Christopher Aguilar's character who plays Andrew. And he's like, Grandma, I brought you a present. I'm sorry, I'm late. Here's my present. And she's looking at him and just has no clue who he is. Absolutely not. And so that's when young Andrew calls for Dr. Van Gogh. And now we see this is the name that the doctor has chosen in this reality, this timeline. He's chosen Van Gogh. And he has hair.
Yeah.
And she can't remember a thing except for the only thing she can remember is a biotemporal chamber, which she was in. But then the doctor's like, wait a minute, I don't even know what you're talking about, because he hasn't put her in that chamber yet in this point, right? So her amnesia is pretty bad. Chakotay shows up. And he arrives to basically discuss the biotemporal chamber procedure.
And when Chakotay, there's a lot of little details in here. Like when Chakotay shows up, Andrew calls him captain.
That's right. That's right.
He calls him captain. And you're like, wait.
That's
a minute,
right. You're like, how's that happening?
Mm-hmm. How does that happen? And and even going back in that very opening shot, her POV, before we even see her face on the biobed, we just see the blurry POV going around.
Yes.
And we hear Tom's voice saying, you know, come on, kids, or something like that. He says, but you can hear that it's Tom off camera.
I didn't catch that at all.
Let's get out of here. The doctor says, you know, you guys all have to leave. I've got to do this procedure. And you hear Tom's voice.
Okay.
Say, hey, let's get out of here. I don't know if he says kids, but it's just a lot of little detailed clues. Yeah.
Right.
The doctor's hair. Mm-hmm. And already I was kind of going, wait, we're in the future somehow. But when we jumped, are we going backwards? Like I immediately thought from that point of view, because when it jumps from the point of view into the scene where they talk about the biotemporal chamber.
Yeah.
And Kes says, you said something about the biotemporal chamber. And the doctor says, oh no, not yet. We talked about it, but we haven't done that yet. But in the previous moment, he was starting to do it. So I was like, wait, we got to
wait. What's
going
happening?
Backwards.
A little confusing for sure. But this whole chamber is in order to help prolong her life. That's the whole issue with this suggestion of using this chamber.
Yeah, but the doctor says to Chakotay, he goes, a 9-year-old Okompan, you know, this could be normal. This, you know, this what's happening for her could be normal mm-hmm. with O'Compens, but this biotemporal chamber is untested.
Right.
And at best it's
it's experimental. And so yeah. then now she gets cold, and we realize this is one of the things that happens right before yeah. she flashes, that she starts getting cold, her temperature starts dropping, and then she flashes and boom, she's no longer in sick.
She jumps.
Yeah. Now she's waking up in her own bed in her quarters, and she overhears Andrew and who we later discover to be Linus talking. And she gets up and she walks over and she doesn't know who Linus is. No clue.
And Linus is, yeah. as earlier said, mom called her
exactly.
mom. So the audience sort of knows, oh, this must be her daughter in this right. timeline.
Right. And, yep. You know, the daughter tells her, you know, remember when you used to work in sick bay? And she doesn't remember that. So mm-hmm. every time she jumps, she has no memory of any other timeline at all. She's completely
except what the just future happened. That she just jumped from.
Exactly.
Linus even so says confusing. In this scene when yeah. Kes kind of explains, well, what about the biotemporal chamber and the mm-hmm. and we were in sick bay, and Linus yeah. says none of those things that you remember before you just woke up ever happened.
Yeah.
They haven't happened yet.
They haven't even happened yet, which is crazy.
Yeah. So we've seen her jump twice now, from yeah. that opening scene to the mm-hmm. sick bay scene, now to this scene. Mm-hmm. So she's jumping backwards in time.
Right.
Start right. to kind of figure that out.
So Linus is concerned. So she escorts Kes towards sick bay because yep. she feels that, you know, her mom is confused and that maybe her mother is dreaming. And now they're in sick bay and the doctor is scanning her and realizes that she's lost more than 98% of her memory engrams. So mm-hmm. the onset of morelogium, I guess more is just tagged onto the front of elogium, right?
Yes.
Morelogium. It's not like M-O-R-E. I think it's morelogium is the name of the O'Compan name for it, right? The
for what's phase. Happening.
Yeah, the final phase of O'Compan.
The final phase of life, yeah. Mm. Yes, and so the doctor scanning her. Tom enters in this scene.
With Andrew and Harry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Harry, and we realize that Tom is her husband.
Yes.
This comes out.
Yes.
And we realize that Linus is their daughter.
Can we just time out for a second? So Linus is clearly full grown. She's an adult.
I did the math. Okay. So go ahead.
I'm wondering, is it because she's half O'Compan, she yes. is maturing faster than
has normal? To be.
That's the only explanation.
Yes, because the one thing we know is Kes is 9 years old. The doctor said that right now.
Correct.
Now, in our show, Kes is 3, right?
Right, right.
So at 3 years old, by 2 or 3 years old, mm-hmm. you are a grown person. You're
oh,
a grown
okay.
adult.
Yes,
right?
That makes
two
sense.
Or 3 years old.
That makes
and we
sense.
Know that she's 9 now. So that means yeah. there's about 6 years to play with in here, mm-hmm. which means that in those 6 years, this year of hell had to have happened. Mm-hmm. B'Elanna had to have died. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, I'm going to jump through some plot points. in this 5 or 6 years, yes, yeah. B'Elanna had to have died. Kes helped Tom get over it. They got married. Mm-hmm. Let's say now we're out of our 5 years, let's say we're a year into that.
Yeah.
They get married. They have a baby a year later. Now their baby is 2 or 3, grows up because she's 2 or 3 now, like Kes was mm-hmm. in our show.
Right.
She's an adult. You marry her. You guys have a kid a year ago because I yeah. think the doctor says something like he's a year old, even though he looks 14.
So he has accelerated growth as well,
yes.
right? My kid, even though he's only a quarter, he's not yes. only a quarter O'Compan at this point, correct?
That's the thing. I think that they're just saying, if you got any O'Compan in you, this happens.
Okay.
That's the only way the math works.
Okay.
With all
makes
this.
Sense.
But yes, it's this is a brain teaser and I have the same issue.
It sure is. So let's just go back to that one scene. And the doctor walks away with Tom and explains to him what's going on with his yeah. with this experimental treatment. Linus walks over and argues that no, mom wouldn't want this. She has accepted the length of her lifespan. It's 9 years and she doesn't want to extend anything. She's fine, yeah. you know, don't do this. And both Tom and Harry argue with Linus that, hey, wait a minute, if there's anything we can do to extend her life, we need to do this.
Yeah, I gotta say, when Tom argued, I don't know why I yelled at her so harshly.
At Linus?
Yes, yeah. I yelled at Linus. And I'm thinking as I'm watching it, like, why did I choose as an actor to play it so hot? Because
yeah.
that's my daughter and I should know, you know, have compassion.
Yeah.
She's also, you know, suffering and I should have been more empathetic, I guess. I didn't like the way that I, most of this whole episode, I was happy with it, you know, my performance. Yeah. But that moment I was like, nah, I wish we had another version.
Yeah, I almost feel like our connection with Linus, both your connection and my connection, weren't fleshed out as much as we could have. Like I think we were more shocked that as actors, we were filming this episode and boom, hey, you've got a daughter. Boom. Hey, Harry, that daughter is now your wife. And we literally were thrown into this to the point that we were kind of shocked or not prepared as well. You know what I'm saying? And in terms of drawing that sort of relationship that, okay, this is definitely, this is my daughter. And which if you had a stronger connection or had done more backstory, maybe you wouldn't have yelled at her as much. But I feel like all of a sudden, you know, we were served up with a family immediately. Like I have a son, you have a daughter, your daughter is my wife. And it's just like, whoa, you know, it's a lot to process as actors, as young actors.
Yeah.
And we were both in our, you know, you were in your early 30s. I was in my late 20s at the time. And so I think we were just kind of ambushed.
We were trying to
figure out the script ourselves, probably.
As I watched this, I remembered it was very confusing. I was like,
definitely.
Yeah, a lot of things were confusing. I remember as we shot it. Kes, in this scene also, you know, the doctor goes over and explains some of what's going on. We go over to talk to Kes, all of us, and she says that doesn't explain her jumping around, like the jumps don't make sense to her. So she's kind of tracking these jumps of her journey backwards in time that no one else is aware of.
Yep.
And that's another thing that made this difficult, is that Kes was the only one that was kind of going in a consistent direction. Because every time she jumped, we went back into slow motion forwards time. You know what I mean? Like she jumped to a point and now we're heading forwards again up until she jumps back. And now we all have to get caught up. So the other characters were as confused as her.
Yeah.
Or more confused than her. Yes. You know what I mean? Like they were like, what are you talking about?
You know, the title of this is Before and After. It should have been Discombobulated is the name of this episode.
Yeah.
And so she's asking what's happening to her. And as she's talking to the doctor, she flashes yet again.
Now she's
in mess hall. And Neelix is bringing out her birthday cake for her 9th birthday, right?
And Neelix is in a uniform, by the way.
He's
in a Starfleet uniform. Yeah. He's in a Starfleet uniform, and they're singing.
Yes.
He's
a Jolly Good Fellow. Yeah.
He's a Jolly Good Fellow, which I remember when we shot this scene, I'm like, why are we singing this song? Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, because the Happy Birthday to You song is copyrighted. And they didn't want to pay the money to the whoever they would have to, you know, pay for the back then.
Are you serious?
You had to pay a royalty. So they wouldn't sing it. And I'm like, what? Like, this is her birthday. Like, there's so many other confusing things. Why are we singing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow?
Anyway. You're telling me the traditional Happy Birthday to You song
was written by somebody that owned the rights to that, and it only became public domain in the last few years.
Oh my god!
So when we were making Voyager,
public domain.
Yeah, had to pay for it. Now it's public domain. Now you can sing it. That's why you'll probably see it on a lot more TV shows. But
wow,
then you didn't see it very often because they charged an arm and a leg. It was a crazy amount of money.
Wow, I do like Neelix's line after Kes blows out the candles, and he says, "It's good to see that old lung is still working, Kessie." He calls her Kessie, first of all. Yeah. We don't hear that, but he's referring to the fact that she had to give up one of her lungs after Neelix had his lung removed by the Vidians. Remember that? So that's a little, and we don't have a lot of lines that kind of refer back to episodes in the past. So I found that interesting and unique and kind of cool to hear that.
And didn't Ken Biller write that episode with the Vidians? And
I think he may have written
it. So
yeah.
So Ken would have
made that connection. Yeah. But yes, we do find out that Neelix is security, and Kes tries to ask Andrew questions to get the box, you know, to sort of like figure out what's happening.
Where
with
was
situation.
He? Where were you? Did you come straight here? She's trying to figure out the timeline.
Right. But the doctor interrupts. The doctor interrupts that whole conversation. And basically,
I gotta say one thing about Alan Craker's direction. I noticed immediately that he was doing some really interesting things, moving the actors, blocking the actors with movement, but it felt very authentic. I really like the blocking in this mess hall scene with Kes moving to Andrew and then the yeah. doctor joining and then them moving yeah. and, you know, falling into one position and then turning to the bar. That kind of staging by directors keeps the frame interesting just to the eye, just mm-hmm. looking, watching a scene as you yeah. see people moving through space or settling into new positions, changing directions, things like that. He did a great job of doing that without it feeling forced in any way. I thought it was
Very organic. There was a super nice flow to this scene for sure. Yeah. So the next part is she confides in the doctor that, listen, I this is going to sound crazy, but please hear me out. And he's like, please, I'll listen to anything. And she says, my memories do not coincide with anyone else's. No one remembers any of the things that I remember. So the doctor's like, well, wait a minute, that's strange. And then she brings up the biotemporal chamber, which shocks the doctor because he only thought of that morning and hadn't even explained this new experimental treatment to Kes yet. So now he realizes, okay, something is truly going on with her. And that's when they head to sick bay.
Yeah, we're in sick bay. The doctor says she's lost 95% of her memory and, presumably she's just remembering the future events where she's jumping from. That's it.
Yeah.
She's not remembering anything else.
Right.
Yeah. She remembers Andrew giving her a birthday present. And then later Andrew was working on the birthday present. So she definitely starts to realize that she's going, you know, that she's remembering things backwards. And the doctor thinks that Kes may have developed some kind of precognition that allows her to see the future. Mm-hmm. And events that happen, that's how they're interpreting it right now.
Right.
So Chakotay says to Paris that, you know, they should go work on scanning for temporal anomalies that may be causing this, you know, her to experience events from the future. Mm-hmm. And she decides, and Kes decides, she wants to help herself. And she tells the doctor she wants to look at all of her old medical records. So she pops up and goes over to the computer to start looking for that. So everybody's starting in this timeline, sick bay at this for this moment, starting to understand that she's, you know, what's happening.
Yeah. So this is this scene is literally the scene that everyone else realizes something very wrong is happening or something something out of the ordinary is happening with Kes. So this
is the hard part of this whole story is they're all realizing in this scene and in this moment. They're wrapping their heads around, oh, Kes has got precognition or something is happening, some temporal weirdness that she's knows what's in the future. But they're realizing it in this timeline. But as soon as she jumps back to a new timeline, they're starting all over again.
Yeah.
They won't know it.
Yeah,
and that was the part that was, for me, like, wait, they already learned that. Oh, no, we've jumped back further. So they've got to learn it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of repetitive lines from Kes explaining to everyone over and over again what happens, right? But she doesn't, I mean, she doesn't jump that quickly. And No,
because we go to Kes's quarters. Here.
Yeah.
And Paris comes in. She's looking at logs about her life.
Yeah.
And she doesn't remember. She says, you know, I must have lived, looks like I lived a really full life, but I don't remember any of it.
And this is where you share that you had a crush on her from the beginning. So you were lying the whole time when you were fighting me.
I guess so. I didn't know that back then.
Yeah.
But in this timeline, Paris says he had a crush on her since he first met her, and Neelix was super jealous.
Yeah.
And he denied it, but Neelix was right that he really did have a crush on her. And she listens and she's like, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
And he says he brings up the year of hell for the first time, which is, I love that they're putting in some of this. It's a great opportunity to put in some of this, what's episodes that are going to happen in the future.
Okay. So this is definitely an episode that was not recorded before, not filmed before this episode, correct? They're referring to the episode Year of Hell, which is still to be recorded.
Yeah.
Correct? Is that what they're doing? So the writers, I thought they kind of were writing by the seat of their pants, but maybe not. Maybe they already had everything worked out where they knew.
I think they had some big episodes planned and they knew somewhere down the line they wanted to do something called the Year of Hell about, you know, Okay. And they'd start laying in some of the foundations of that now. But right. Tom says to her, you know, B'Elanna was lost. She doesn't remember B'Elanna. Mm-hmm. She doesn't remember Janeway. Mm-hmm. Carrie was lost. Tom even says B'Elanna was someone who was very special to me. And then you helped me through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she goes, I don't remember any of that. I don't have any feelings about any of this. And Tom says, I've got enough feelings for the both of us.
Yeah. That's after you try to touch her face and she moves away, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He's a sensitive guy.
That was a nice line. That was a very non Tom Paris, very non Nick Locarno line for you to say, I have enough feelings for both of us.
Yeah. He's a feeling guy.
Yeah. Okay.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
But this is where she discovers that she did have radiation poisoning in the past because of this story about Year of Hell. Yeah. And that's when both Paris and Cass come to the conclusion that Chronoton torpedo fragments leaked radiation into the ship, penetrated our shields because the torpedoes were in a constant state of temporal flux.
Yep.
And that's when they say, hey, we better tell the doctor what's going on. So they head down the corridor to sickbay and the flashing happens again.
Another
she jumps
jump.
Again. Bye-bye. Yeah, she's
another
gone.
Another jump.
Now we're in Harry and Linus's quarters, right? So we're in Harry and Linus's quarters and Harry is in the process of taking a picture of Kes and baby Andrew. Kes asks the date and realizes that the jump was a 6-month jump. So she grabs Tom and heads to sickbay. It's sort of like the continuation of heading to sickbay.
There's a moment in this scene though, where Harry says something like, well, how does it feel to be, does it feel, or he said, I didn't write the line down, but it was something like, is it strange to be now to know that you're a granddad or something? And Paris goes, not as strange as having you as a son-in-law. Son. Or something like that.
I don't think you said son-in-law. You said as a son, which is
as
funny.
A son. Yeah, that was funny.
It
that
is. That's nice, why I called you daddy at the beginning of this.
It was a brief little exchange, but it made me laugh.
It is.
So we go back to sick bay, mm-hmm. and Kes says that she's jumped 5 times so far. Random jumps. They're not. Mm-hmm. You know. They're not. The same each time. The same.
Right.
Amount of time. Mm-hmm. And we learned that she was inoculated for this radiation, this chronoton radiation, like everybody else was 3 years ago. They were all inoculated during the Year of Hell.
But there are residual trace amounts of chronotons that have reactivated in Kes.
And they talk about this idea, maybe this biotemporal chamber thing that you are talking about, maybe that reactivated these particles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, again, everybody's wrapping their heads around she's traveling backwards in time.
Yeah.
That's so the they discover it again for the second time.
Yeah. The doctor makes that statement. Your wife is traveling backward through time. So that's him realizing that again for the second time. That's
second
what's
time,
happening,
so
right?
Far.
Yeah. And now they're in the briefing room and Kes is going through a report of what's happened to her. We have Kes, we have Linus, Dr. Paris, Tuvok, and Chakotay, and Kim. So it's a full room. Surprisingly, Linus is the only person who has no lines, but yet she's still there. Yep. And the doc says, you know what? We have to purge all the chronoton particles in her system. And Kim says, you know what? We need to know the precise temporal variance of the specific torpedo fragment which contaminated the ship. Tuvok says, well, tactical sensors were not functioning at the time, so we have 0 records, nothing. So that's kind of a dead end. How are we going to figure this out? We don't know. Yeah. And then we flash, or we don't flash. We go to the science station, and Kes is still in the temporal sink for now. She's still in our time period. Mm-hmm. Linus is trying to run a hypothalamic scan. And she talks about how she had a very good teacher. And Kes says, Dr. Van Gogh. And she goes, No, you.
Yes. You were my teacher. You taught me well. It was a sweet moment, which leads to them sort of opening up even more, because Linus reveals that she feels kind of awkward sometimes about being a mom.
That's right.
It's not her comfort zone.
Yeah.
And she doesn't think she's very good at it. She feels much more comfortable in the science lab or in sick bay. The doctor comes in to take her to sick bay, into a containment field. He's going to start to keep her in there.
To keep her from jumping again, the containment field.
Right? Yeah, the containment field is going to try to keep her from jumping. And as she's walking out, she turns back and she says, Linus, you know, you were a great mom.
Yeah.
Andrew turns out really great.
Right.
And that's a sweet moment.
It was a good bonding moment. For sure.
Yeah. So we go into the sick bay Kes is in the containment field. Paris comes in and we realize that he was also named Mozart for a while.
I thought you settled on Mozart.
Yeah. Paris is like, Dr. Van Gogh, what? I thought you were settled on Mozart. And he says, well, I guess my attachment to the creative things will go on a bit longer.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you ask to enter the containment field, but the doctor says, that's not a good idea. And so then you start telling Kes about the wedding reception that you guys had.
Yeah, Paris goes, how about another installment of Tom and Kes, the early years? Which sounds like he's been trying to remind her, almost like you might with someone with Alzheimer's or something.
Exactly.
Like, tell these stories, see if anything. And so clearly he's been doing that. And he talks about the wedding reception and that Harry was very nervous at this wedding reception and spilled champagne on Tom's dress uniform.
Yes.
So that must have been a fun wedding reception.
Yeah.
Linus comes in. She says, I may have found something. And she's talking about her temperature drops. They're starting to track her temperature.
Yeah, and Linus had found something while studying the effects of the chronotons on other crew members, and that's when the alarm goes off. Her temperature is going down. The doc tries elevating her temperature. It's not working. So she flashes again, but you missed a really important line that Paris says to her. He says, at the time, I thought that was the happiest day of my life. But every day just got better and better. So it shows this really, really tight and great relationship that Tom had with Kes in that reality. So that's,
he's very romantic.
Very romantic in this reality. Yeah.
In this reality. The other thing I noticed, just to pause there, I remember that moment. It was a tight close-up of Tom Paris. Mm-hmm. But I did notice even before this that Alan Craker, first episode he directed with us, was doing some tighter close-ups than we typically did. I noticed a handful of moments where it got into these really tight close-ups that we didn't normally do.
No, anything. And you have one at the end of this when she's flashing or when she's fritzing, you scream, "Do something!" And it's pretty tight on you right there for that scene. Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and he also had in that one, "Do something." I was looking right into the camera, right into
Again.
The lens.
Yeah,
which we don't normally do, to jump into a point of view, that kind of shot with the camera looking at an actor and the actor looking right in the lens is really a shot about Kes's point of view.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Kes sees. So I was looking in that version, it would be like I was looking right into Kes, even though I was looking at the camera.
Right.
We didn't normally do that.
No, because when you look into the camera, you're essentially breaking that fourth wall. Right.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to look directly into the camera, but if it's her POV, well, that makes sense. But again, not something that we typically see on Voyager. So Craker definitely kind of pulled out all the stops and, was super creative in this episode for sure.
Yeah. So I scream, "Do something," looking at the camera, and we jump again backwards in time inside a shuttle.
This is what I was saying earlier.
I remembered this scene.
Yes.
The birthing scene.
Yes.
But what I didn't remember was, where do the babies come out of Ocampans?
Somewhere in the backside.
I'm clearly looking at her back and trying to pull the baby out. And
it's the upper back, though, because, her uniform is kind of, she's pulled it down just so that now it looks like a halter top, right?
Well,
so she pulled it down that far. It was a
towel.
No, it's a weird. It's a full uniform, Robbie. She pulled the sleeves off and then she pulled it down. So now her back
it
is showing.
It didn't look like that. It looked they had built something that looked like a towel wrapped around her.
No, like it does. It does track later. You do see it. You see the uniform on all the way. Right.
By the way, she has some muscles in there.
That's what I wrote down. I was like, my goodness, look at those guns on her. Her arms are so buff. It's just like, I don't even recall her.
I didn't work out back then.
I didn't even know.
No, but she was very fit.
She looked great. I was like, good Lord, look at those arms. So, yes.
And we have the baby. Yes. She has the baby. And that's the baby I was telling you before when I pull that baby around.
Yeah.
That baby could only work for 20 minutes or whatever it was. Yeah. They put the goo on the baby. There was, I actually didn't notice. I remember my memory is that they put some prosthetics on the baby, but I couldn't see.
I didn't see prosthetics. I saw the goo, the cottage cheesy kind of stuff that was on the baby. And then, and you know, honestly, it didn't look like anybody was stressed out about working with the baby. But now that I know the story about you guys, we were a little under the gun to get this baby shot in and
quickly.
And Jennifer was not comfortable. And, you know, that's also because she was 21 at the time. She has no children, so she doesn't know how to hold a baby, you know. So
she has the baby, she sits down, and all of a sudden there's a call from Voyager, we're under attack.
Under attack, yes.
What? Under attack. So we jumped back to Voyager and we're coming out of the shuttle bay. Neelix is helping us, congratulating us, and he's going to take Kes to mess hall because this battle is nasty. And she remembers, Kes, as he's describing this battle, she remembers that in the future, one of her earlier jumps, when she was in the future, they referred to the Year of Hell, and she realizes this must be what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And she even says to Tom, remember you told me about, he goes, you know,
when?
How did you hear about that? And she goes, remember you told me. And he goes, no, he doesn't remember. And she's like, it's a long story. She doesn't want to get into, I'm jumping backwards in time.
Right. And the reason why you don't go to the mess hall is because Neelix says Captain Chakotay has sent Tom on a mission to go to the weapons array to modulate the targeting scanners to a parametric frequency to knock out the Coronaton torpedo launchers. That is a mouthful. And so that is your job. So now as Kes is going to the mess hall with Neelix, she then tells him everything that's happened on the way to the mess hall. And that's when Chakotay and Tom join later. And now they are apprised of the situation via Neelix. And Kes tells him that she needs the exact temporal variance of the torpedo fragment. But Chakotay goes through this list of extensive damage that Voyager has suffered. Damage. Yeah. And says, like, look, we don't
sick bay, the doctor's offline.
We don't have the resources.
Computers are down.
We can't do this. Yeah. We can't do anything at all.
He says only three decks have life support.
Yeah. Yep.
Only three decks out of 14 have life support.
So she flashes again at this point. And she's
cold
now,
and then jumps.
Boom. Resort now program. Here we are. Yeah. She sees Tom and she says she needs to talk. And that's when B'Elanna comes up and gives her a kiss. And I love this scene. She's
gives
like
him a kiss.
Yeah. B'Elanna comes up and gives Tom a kiss. And then she's a little bit taken back and she goes, oh, you must be B'Elanna, which to B'Elanna, this is hilarious because she's like, okay, you're a comedian now. Kes.
Last time I checked.
I'm still B'Elanna. Yeah. So it's very funny.
But clearly in this timeline, in this moment, in this timeline, this is when Paris and B'Elanna have gotten together, which hasn't even happened on the show yet.
They're a couple. Yeah. But now the ship is under attack again. So this is now we're flashing back to very first attack from the Krynim. So I think that when we first see Tom and Kes board Voyager with the newborn baby, that was after months or however weeks of attacks, right? So now we see the initial attack happens while you guys are in the resort program.
Yeah.
So you guys rush to the bridge and Kes is the one who informs Captain Janeway, who is now captain, of course, she's still alive, that the Krynim are the people that are attacking. And she explains what's going on with the torpedoes.
This is Janeway's the first time we've seen Janeway, by the way.
That's right.
This is the first time in the episode that we've seen Janeway, which to me, honestly, it just felt strange that we hadn't seen. Something felt off about the episode besides the complex story. And part of it was that Janeway wasn't a part of it.
Yeah, I was okay with it. It didn't bother me. And I think Kate Mulgrew, the actress, was pretty happy to have time off. So she was probably thinking, this is great for me. Yeah. But it didn't pull me out. It didn't really. No.
Well, Kes explains to Janeway who they are, the Krem. Yep. She explains that these are chronoton-based torpedoes in a state of temporal flux. That's why they're passing through the shields.
That's right.
That's why you're not able to defend yourselves. And Janeway goes over with Torres to one of the side stations.
Mm-hmm. And that's when a torpedo hits.
Yes, and that's when the torpedo hits. And we have some stunt actors for Janeway.
Yeah, I think, Robbie, though, just to rewind a second, I think they are already at that station when Kes is explaining why these torpedoes are working, because she's standing to the side of the station, kind of blocked by a bulkhead, so she's protected from that torpedo that causes that station to explode, right? So it explodes.
It was a great stunt.
It was, and I was like, was that Roxanne that did her own stunt? Probably not. No,
I don't think so.
Because it looked... Because what happened is she gets blown back, right? She gets blown back, but there isn't a cut. It's a direct, the scene continues with Kes rushing in to feel their pulse, to see if they're still alive. And it looked a lot like Roxanne. I thought, oh, that might be her. But chances are, like you said, that was probably a stunt person for both Janeway and Torres. And we find that they're dead.
And they're dead. They're both dead.
Tom comes over very distraught.
And Chakotay, by the way, Chakotay comes over first and Tom follows.
Yeah.
But both of them are very distraught, which I thought for the, Janeway, JC shippers, another moment, he was very, very moved and very upset with her. But Chakotay says, I need you at the con, and they're back to work. Chakotay's got to figure out what to do. And he asks Kes, because she seems to know.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, try remodulating the targeting scanners. So we do. We try, and Harry remodulates the targeting scanners using a parametric frequency. He says that may work, and it does. It works. The ship blows up. The Krenim ship is destroyed by this remodulating the targeting scanner.
I want to add in here that when you guys are kind of bent over Janeway and Torres, and they're dead, clearly. And when Chakotay says, Tom, we need you at the con, he's kind of saying, look, I know this is your gal, but you need to just get with the program right now and just
We're in a battle.
We're in a battle, right? And you say two words. You say, I, sir. But the way you delivered that I, sir, was great.
Aw, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, it was a very
I remember that moment.
It was a very small voice that came out, which was a voice of pain, a voice of loss, and a voice of acceptance that you had to go back to duty. And it was a very small I, sir. And it just, it was perfect. It was a perfect tone.
Thanks,
and so that was good acting on your part.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so we blow up the ship, cut outside. And by the way, that ship explosion was very cool. I love the way
it blew
up and you saw the parts of the ship blowing away.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of these space shots are better than others. I thought that was a great one.
It was a good one. It was a good
super
one.
Super epic. Yeah.
All right, we find us in mess hall now, and Harry is giving the damage report to Chakotay. Tom is treating crew members and is still in a state of shock from losing Torres. Kes consoles Tom and then speaks to Neelix and finds out that the torpedo fragment is lodged in a Jeffrey's tube on deck 11, section 2. Mm-hmm. Kes says she has to go there. And Neelix says, no, you're going to be burned to a crisp if you go. Which is a little confusing because that's not what ends up happening when she goes there. So I was thinking
she is sort of getting sick. She's getting
She's coughing, but she's not being burnt to a crisp. Well, I thought, I don't know why it was written like that. Maybe he would have said like the radiation poisoning will be too much for you is what he should have said instead of saying that she's going to be burned to a crisp. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So she's in the Jeffrey's tube and she's coughing. She's crawling along, not burned to a crisp. Her tricorder locks on to the phase variance finally, and she realizes it's 1.47. That's the number she needs.
Yeah, we see it. We see it on the tricorder.
On the tricorder,
the readout, which was cool.
Yeah,
we see it kind of going through its scans and lands on 1.47.
Yeah. And then she flashes.
She jumps again, jumps backwards in time, and she's like, "Doctor, you've lost your hair." So we know we're getting back near things we're used to.
Yes.
And she gives the doctor this 1.47 variance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we learn it's 1.47 microseconds at this point. We didn't know what the 1.47, what exactly, what is that a measure of? And now we know it's a measure of microseconds, right?
Yeah.
So then we go to the briefing room and Kes has now jumped 6 years total into the past. Janeway talks about how she has never come across any phenomenon quite like this. Torres suggests that setting up a biotemporal chamber and exposing Kes to a precisely modulated field of anti-chronoton particles mm-hmm. would purge her system and bring her back into temporal sync with everyone else. Kes then, on the way out of the briefing room, warns Janeway that she must avoid the Krenim at all costs.
Yep.
And we jump to sickbay.
And by the way, so, you know, here's how my brain works. Like, she's warning them about the Krenim, but we've seen Janeway in a battle with the Krenim. She's already told her that. So again, Janeway's learning in this timeline. She's learning the same information. It makes sense.
Right.
Kes knows every time she jumps backwards, they don't know what has happened.
So here's the question. If she tells Janeway this in this scene, and then she jumps again, does Janeway not remember this information? She clearly doesn't, because when we see the Krenim for the first time, she's like, how do you know, Kes? How do you know who these people are? And blah, blah, blah. So this warning really was, there's no use for this warning. There's no effect. Like, this warning never stuck with her, right?
If we stick in this timeline.
In this timeline only. Okay.
She does keep jumping back. We'll get there. But, you know, we jump out of this timeline. So,
okay. All right.
So if depending on when this scene happened, if it was in, let's call it our normal timeline, then she would remember it. But if it wasn't, if it was anywhere on either side, because timelines aren't linear, right? If one thing changes, it splits into now this could happen or that could happen.
Yeah, but my thought process was, if she tells her beware of the Krenim and she jumps, Janeway is still in that old timeline.
Yes.
Janeway doesn't jump with Kes. So I would think that she would still retain that knowledge of the Krenim being dangerous, because she has never left the timeline, and then she goes through and eventually gets attacked by the Krenim down the road, right? So I would assume that
this is the part that just breaks my brain. It's why it's hard for me to get emotionally invested in these stories.
Okay.
I feel like every timeline is just it's a fake out, because it's not it's not real. Where is real time?
Yes,
I mean they're all real time. I get that. That's the whole fundamental basis of time stories.
Correct.
But yet, if time is jumping like this, then what's real? Is any of it real?
Okay.
She warns him of the Krenim. We go to sick bay.
The anti-chronoton treatment begins. It's working. Yes. It's working.
The one, by the way, that the doctor has talked about a couple of times with a lot of pride, you know, it's his experimental and, dare I say, genius plan to use this biotemporal chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he talked about it in a few of the timelines with the same pride.
He's pretty full of himself.
He's pretty full of himself. Mm-hmm. But now we're finally doing this procedure. Mm-hmm. And I have to say again, Alan Craker did a phenomenal job of staging Bob moving around that room. The camera moved with and eventually landed all this movement during, it felt like a legit procedure. And then the shot dumped off and landed in a close-up on Kes for her next jump, which I thought was beautiful staging.
Craker's like a mad scientist movement guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he's in, I'm going to do this and this formula and I'm going to do this and then we'll end right here. And it's like, wow, you really did do that. So yes, I agree. It was wonderful.
It was really
wonderful.
Lands on a close-up of Kes and we jump again to a ready room scene, but this is the scene from the pilot.
The pilot ready room scene.
When Neelix is asking to stay on the ship, it's the same dialogue.
But the makeup and hair is not the same.
No, it's not.
You notice that, right?
Yes.
Kes looks like whoever showed up to do Kes's makeup that day was not around during the pilot. I'm thinking that's somebody else completely. Her hair looks different. Her makeup looks different. It just was
But
I, you know, but Neelix is explaining everything the way he did in the original scene, though. I think it sounds like that dialogue. I remember him saying in the pilot episode, I'm here to anticipate your every need and your first need is me. So he did say that exact same dialogue, right?
But Kes in this version, in this timeline, she says, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
And Nelis is like, wait.
Whoa, we talked about this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He thinks she's chickening out, right? That she doesn't want to stay with Voyager.
And
but
he's trying to shut her up. And then Janeway kind of goes, no, tell me.
Tell me what's going on. Yeah.
What's going on? And as Kes starts to explain, she jumps again. Jumps to Ocampa, I guess.
The Ocampan homeworld.
Mm-hmm. We're in the caves and she's working on a box of lettuce. She's growing some lettuce or something, some plant. Yeah. And it's young Kes. It's a girl, which by the way, I think
she 2 months old now or whatever.
She's a baby.
Yeah.
But she looked a lot like Jennifer Lean. I thought that was really good casting.
Good casting.
The girl was really good. And her dad shows up. So we meet Kes's dad. And I thought that scene was great.
Yeah. She tries to explain to her father what's happening, but of course he thinks she's playing games. And and she also doesn't recognize her father too. So she doesn't know who he is. And she flashes again before the explanation is complete. And now she's in an Ocampan hospital and she's being born. Kes is being born. And my
out of her mom's back.
Her mom's back, right?
Another back baby.
Mm-hmm. So the question is
Ocampan back babies.
Is infant Kes the same infant that was infant Linus?
I thought about this, that. I don't think so. They definitely, I think they use different babies.
A different baby. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We flash again.
Back baby.
Yes. We flash again to Kes's mother's womb where we see Kes as a fetus.
Now we go into like a stylized, crazy microscopic embryo and cell
fetus,
splitting.
Fetus, embryo, single cell.
Going from many, an embryo to many cells to four cells to two cells
to one cell to nothing.
To nothing. She doesn't
pitch
exist.
Pitch black.
Just for a moment.
Yeah. Then everything reverses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the cells start splitting from one to two to four to the embryo. And
back baby comes out.
Yep. Back baby comes out.
The mother.
Who was the mom? Who played the mom?
I don't know. She looked familiar, but I don't know who that is. And she says, I think one day she'll see the sun. And that's so true. She does see the sun.
Yeah.
And that flashes. She flashes once again. And now she's back to the room. She is back to the chamber. Yeah, back to sick bay where the anti-chronoton treatment is happening again. Still happening. And the chronotons have all been purged. She is back into temporal sync with everyone. Yep. She's now back to real time. So everything has been real time, but this is real time is what I'm going to say, right? The real reality. Yep. She's there. And we jump to the resort program where Neelix is musing about his future as a security officer.
Yeah.
Tuvok sort of reigns on his parade and says, well, you know, what Kes is describing is just one possible future. And Neelix comes back with, oh, good. So maybe I'm chief of security, actually. So, which is hilarious. Then the camera kind of pans over and we see Harry asking Kes if she remembers all of her memories of the past.
All of your memories?
And Kes like, I do remember the replicator rations that you owe me. And I'm like, oh, darn it. I can't get away from that. Yeah. I felt like I blocked Kes a little bit in that move, though. So I felt like, oh, man, I should have moved a little bit further over. But, you know, the camera does end up on her. Finally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And everyone is just curious about Kes's version of the future.
Everyone's Chakotay, asking her, you know, what happened with me? What happened with me? Yeah.
I love Chakotay's joke about Tom joining a monastery. Yes. Harry sticks up for you. I stick up for you saying, no. He'll get married. He'll have a family, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then
get married and live happily ever after.
Yeah. But Tom's the one that says, look, don't tell me. I like a little mystery in my life. And Janeway agrees. Let's just leave the future to the future. Tuvok does request that Kes make a report on the Krenim. And she says, I'll get started right away. Janeway says, no, not now. Enjoy your party. And Kes says, if there's one thing that this experience has taught me, Captain, is that there is no time like the present. And as she leaves, we have that final lovely shot of the entire crew watching Kes leave, which we never have those shots. It's pretty rare to see everybody standing there kind of at attention in a way.
No, I thought it was great. I thought it was really well staged and well directed by Alan Krieger. I love the way I did enjoy the ending of this. I like the way that things sort of wrapped up.
Yeah, it was a good wrap up, but I agree.
But for me, it was a tough episode to track. I just found myself confused. And I've heard that with the fans that this is, people either really like this episode or really hate it.
Yeah.
I'm not on either extreme because there's a lot of things I liked about it, but I don't think it was successful in the end. It didn't.
Give me your 1 to 10. Give me your 1 to 10 rating.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I would give this a 5. I'm right in the middle on this one.
Okay.
Because there were some things like Alan's direction I thought was really good. I think I think a lot of the performances in the episode were really good. I thought Chakotay was great. I thought the doctor was funny. I thought you and I and our guest stars were really good. I thought everybody, you know, I was happy with my performance. And Jennifer Lean, you know, did a tour de force, you know, playing all the ages of man there.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work for me as a story. That's why I'm a solid 5, which is not a great number. You know?
No, I'm going to punch it up because of all the positive elements that you mentioned. I'm going to pump it up. This is more of a 6.5 for me, maybe a 7, just because of, again, you know, just everyone's performance. This was kind of a tour de force for Jennifer, a good episode for her to really stretch her. This is her threshold, really. You know what I'm saying? Like, she got to really stretch in this one. So I'm going to say that I'm going to rate it higher because of that. What about a theme or lesson that you learned from this episode?
The theme and the lesson was beautifully scripted by Ken Biller. The very last line when Kes says there's no time like the present.
Yeah.
To me, that's the theme. That's the absolute truth is that's, I believe that there's no time, you know, stay in the moment, stay present.
I wrote that down as well. I have, there's no time like the present, but I also wrote down the other lesson comes from early in this episode when Kes is speaking to Andrew, trying to get some facts from Andrew.
Yeah.
And he's like, and she says like, listen, I need to ask you some questions and I really need you to think about them before you answer. And little Andrew looks at her and says, I always think before I speak. You taught me that. And so again, wise Kes, because this is something that everybody can do with this lesson. Because thinking before you speak can save a lot of misery in the world. Because I think a lot of people, they run off of emotion and react. People are reactionary and you react. You're not thinking. You definitely are not thinking when you're reactionary and you're just saying what's going to come out of your mouth. So that was my other important lesson.
That's a good takeaway. That's always,
I
think there's often more than one lesson in a Star Trek episode.
There can be more than one. So that's why I like to say, instead of theme, what are the lessons that we've learned from this, right?
Great. All right. Well, that was fun.
That was a nice really little review.
Watch,
yeah. I'm sorry you gave it such
my brain.
You gave it such a low review, but I understand the story really, it was hard for you to get invested.
Problematic for me,
right?
It's a story. It's just,
I understand.
And it's not that I think Ken could have done anything differently. I think it's just a concept. Like, I don't know that this concept could have elevated the number for me, no matter what. It's a hard one.
Okay.
To wrap my head around.
No problem. That's your opinion and you are entitled to it. All right.
Well, that was fun. What's next week? Do we know?
Next week is the episode Real Life, which is funny because we're talking about real life here. Like, is this the real life or is that not real? So now next week we are actually reviewing an episode called Real Life. So that should be exciting. All right. Thanks a lot, guys, for tuning in for this week. All of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.
Bye, guys.
See ya.